Thank you for downloading The Y Factor on the BBC World Service. I'm Nastran Tavakoli-Farr, and on this edition, we'll be finding out why the father-son relationship is so important.
We're going to go play in the park. You ready?
Let's rock and roll.
Are you sure you don't want to take off your flash suit?
Fathers, the first model of manhood for many boys. A relationship that is changing fast with the times. And becoming a father can change a man himself.
So now in the car, I just go crazy. I just absolutely just sing along to everything. And he sings along to everything. Like we were singing Elton John the other day or what have you. And he was loving every part of it. I'm still standing. And this is what fatherhood does. It's calling out a side of me that I'd never noticed. A side of me that I'm slightly embarrassed about. A side of me that I'm a bit, ugh, I can't sing.
Poet Yomi Shode in the car with his 4-year-old son, Noah.
I can just about do all these dance moves, but I'm going to have to actually do these things. I'm going to actually have to do all of these things in order for him to be as expressive as he wishes to be. Because if I choose not to be that person, then he's only going to mirror me. And I don't want a child that is like, ugh. I don't want a child that's full of excitement but then doesn't know how to show it.
This is the BBC World Service. I'm Nastran Tavakoli-Farr. And on this edition of The Y Factor, we ask why the father-son relationship is so important.
I think the overwhelmingly significant and important thing about that father-son relationship is that the father is a role model to the son. And the father is the blueprint, the template, the ideal to some extent, that not necessarily consciously but unconsciously, the son in growing up, developing and becoming a man, uses the father as the primary role model or template on which to build his personality.
That's screenplay writer and former prison counsellor Jonathan Asser. He says that his difficult relationship with his father led to him bullying others while at boarding school.
I was put in isolation in order to sort of protect boys who I was involved in bullying, and in order to punish me and stop me from doing it. And I remember thinking, well, I'm going to, you know, not get caught again. I'm going to be more adept in my behavior towards people if I'm victimizing them.
There is a lot of study about the father-son relationship.
Michael Gurian has been a family counsellor for almost 30 years and has written books about raising sons. He looks at how research on neurobiology and the brain can be applied to help explain family dynamics.
From the nature viewpoint, what I think we've discovered is that there are assets the father is giving that help with self-regulation, that help with maturation and development, so what we call social-emotional learning. All of these things are actually going on in the brain. And the maturation needs to happen, you know, not just body, but brain. And the son is testosterone-driven, like the father, right? Males get 10 to 20 times more testosterone than females. It sets up our male brains in utero. So, you know, on the nature side, in terms of brain science and biochemistry, it appears that the father understands certain things intuitively about raising the son that come from being male. So, for instance, the impulse control, you know, self-regulation that you would get, that everyone is trying to get, all brains are trying to get from between 10 and 17-ish, 18-ish. There's a lot of brain growth toward self-regulation and toward connecting pathways between the midbrain and the top of the brain that does executive decision making. It appears the father really helps with this. And then 15 to 20, the brain's, you know, more developed, certainly more mature. But this is a high risk-taking time for young guys, 15 to 20. The testosterone is flowing. They're taking lots of risks. Addictions can set in at that age. So it's just so important to have the dad there guiding character development, emotional development, all of the things that he's going to need to be a man, which he will need to be.
I think any boy is going to tend to model his ideas of what a man is on the image that he has of his father, but not always by emulating it, sometimes by rejecting that image.
That's Christopher Dickey, foreign editor for The Daily Beast. He's traveled the world as a journalist, reporting from Central America, as well as being the Washington Post's bureau chief in Cairo. But despite a professional life spent covering big global events, the story that really fascinated him was much closer to home, namely his relationship with his father, the former American poet laureate James Dickey.
I was never interested in doing the kind of macho things that my father did, or at least not obviously. You know, my father was a veteran of World War II and a football player and an athlete. I was never a football player, never an athlete, at least not, didn't even have the vaguest aspirations to any of those things after I was about 8 years old. But then what did I do with my life? I spent most of my life as a war correspondent, taking really pretty extraordinary risks. So was that an effort to one-up my father? Well, there may be some element of that.
Christopher's father would brag to his son about how he'd slept with over 1,000 women and been unfaithful to Christopher's mother. Christopher himself married young, which he says is because he didn't want to be like his father. However, there was one exception.
Well, there was one night that I spent with one of my father's lovers, but that was not a very good experience, I must say. I sort of was there and I thought better of what I was doing, and I thought this was really not a smart thing to do.
Was there ever something that you really wanted to tell your father that you couldn't do it directly?
Yes, I think the crux came as my mother was drinking herself to death, and I was blaming him for this. And we could have talked or tried to talk about that, but we didn't. And it was a combination of just the difficulty of talking about relationships and talking about something as sensitive as that, and also in my father's case, the fact that he would go into this kind of fog of alcohol, and he wouldn't really address anything.
Christopher's father served as a pilot during World War II. Many of the people who fought ended up finding it hard to express their emotions. Author of parenting books Jane Issay told me more.
The veterans and the people who had suffered, not just the veterans, but the people who had suffered in World War II, were somewhat emotionally constricted.
Mm. So you feel that their sons didn't think that there was the potential to be closer to dad?
There was no point.
There's a real hopelessness to these words that I find shocking. It's an observation that makes me sad for not just the children, but also for the fathers who are navigating such a difficult inner landscape with minimal help. But Jane says things have changed.
Families are closer now than they were in the post-war era.
I met some dads who are consciously making an effort to be closer to their children.
Hi, Billy, it's Naz.
Hi, Naz, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for coming today. I want to take you into Dad's House Breakfast Club.
That's Billy McGranigan. Billy has a son in his 20s who he raised on his own. Aside from the difficulties of being a single parent, Billy told me he felt especially isolated as a single father, with little support from other parents. This inspired him to start a group for dads, who now meet weekly at a breakfast club along with their children.
Josh, can you turn that down?
One of the boys is 4-year-old Josh.
Thanks, son. What do you like to do for fun?
Go on the playground.
Yeah?
And I play swimming lessons.
Josh's dad is Phil, and who sat down with fellow dad Richie and took a moment to reflect on the relationship. How did you feel when you found out you were having sons, specifically?
You know, I felt I could be his role model, you know. What about you, Phil? How did you feel?
There was a slight relief that it was a boy. I do think having a son is easier.
How is the father-son relationship different now compared to when you were boys?
The way I was brought up is my mum was much more dominant than my dad. So I come from an Indian background, and culturally it was like, you know, you've just got to sit at the dinner table and eat what was given on the plate and stuff like that. My mum would force things onto me because my dad was very quiet and took a back seat.
Oh, no, I was going to say, just as you were saying about comparing, I didn't really like to, we never really talked about anything. Do you know what I mean? There would be certain things you don't discuss. So that's one of the things, like with Joshua, that I'm going to make sure that I change, that is that he can come to me for anything, and obviously that we can just discuss, you know, certain subjects.
So much for having us. Thank you.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, thanks really a lot.
This feeling that things are going to be different is also felt strongly by Jonathan Asser, the former prison counsellor we heard from earlier.
I felt there was no emotional connection apart from my father's rages, and he would show extreme aggression in an emotional sense, never in a physical sense, but emotionally he would become very aggressive, very hostile, very contemptuous, sort of bristling with hostility essentially on a regular basis, if not a daily basis. And he would attack me with that hostility, that emotional aggression, and he would put me into shock so that I wasn't able to see anything in my head. I wasn't able to string any words together. My body language would collapse and cave in. My mind would go blank. I went numb emotionally. My body language became limp. I looked at the ground. My expression, I imagine, sort of became blank. Certainly my mind became blank, and I couldn't function. And then he would stop. And that was clearly not a good thing for a child to be subject to that emotional violence.
Like many of the fathers in this programme, Jonathan is determined not to make the same mistakes as his own father with his son.
I love him so much, and I will never, ever let what happened to me happen to him. And I'm just so lucky to be in his life and to be able to be there for him and to protect him. And I just, you know, I'm just streaming with tears on my own here in the studio, but they're tears of love for him. And I guess, yeah, I mean, sounds like a cliche, but maybe in some strange way that they're also tears of love for myself, for the fact that there was no one there to protect me.
It's not just that modern fathers are trying to be empathetic to their sons. Some fathers are also shifting away from the traditional provider role to becoming the main carer.
So I went home and I said to my wife very earnestly, I'm like, you should quit your job and stay home with this baby when it comes. And my wife laughed at me.
That's Scott Benner, the author of Life is Short, Laundry is Eternal, Confessions of a Stay-at-Home Dad.
She just laughed, not because she didn't want to do that, but because I have no ability to really make money. And she was, you know, really onto something. And she said to me, you're a good person, you got a good heart, you love kids, I bet you could do this. So I quit my job. I was the person who got up in the morning, put the kid in a little thing, drove my wife to the train station so we wouldn't have to pay for the parking, brought him home, fed him, vacuumed the carpet, did the laundry, washed the dishes, changed diapers, made the bed, all things that do not sound exciting. And trust me, they're not exciting. They really aren't.
While it was easy to learn all the chores, there was something he still struggled with.
You know, there are times when my wife would be like, he just needs a hug right here. You know, like he's upset. And I'm like, oh, he's fine. She's like, no, look at him. He's upset. She just, there's a connection that is difficult to put into words that women have after they give birth. It's incredible. It's like they're connected by a wire that you can't see. It really is amazing. And I just so I had to look for more physical, emotional cues that I didn't know. They just didn't pop into my head that this is what was happening. And I still struggle with that now, by the way. Even it's just not, it's not quite in my wiring, I guess. When I saw most fathers look their kids in the eye before a baseball game, they'd tell them how important it was to remember what they were taught and win and hit the ball and don't give up. And they gave them all this like rah-rah stuff. And I would bend down before a game and just kind of very quietly in my son's ear whisper, "I love you. Just go do your best."
But being a modern father doesn't mean that men have to parent in the same ways that women do.
I've seen my son get hit with a baseball and my wife and I look and I'm like, just sit there, let him go. Like, he'll be okay. You know, you don't want to jump up and run out there and be like, oh, my baby, just let him live through it. And my wife's like, what if he's hurt? And I used to tell her, look, if he's hurt, he'll be hurt 30 seconds from now. But, you know, if he's not, let him live through it and see what happens.
You often will see moms and dads both watching a game of, let's say soccer.
That's family counselor Michael Gurian.
They're both watching a game, and let's say their 10-year-old son falls down in the game, and you more often see the mom sort of try to do what I call direct empathy, which is, are you okay? You know, how can I help you? The son skinned his knee. How can I help you? That's more direct empathy. And you more likely to see dads using what I call aggression nurturance or challenge nurturance, where they'll say, you're okay, get up, come on, get up. The game needs you. Well, both of those are equally good for self-esteem development. You know, what the mom is doing is great because the son is feeling heard and loved and cared for. And what the dad is doing is great because he's saying, you know, don't wallow in that. You need to have good character and you need to, you're not dying, so you're okay. So get up because the game needs you. And that second part is the crucial part. Males are really into trying to get sons to attach into groups through which they'll raise their self-esteem and to perform well in those groups. And that's also crucial for the son's development. But in this culture now, I do often hear this, that people will say, well, no, that's wrong. You shouldn't say, get up, you're not hurt. The game needs you. You should let the boy have his feelings for as long as he has those feelings. And I think a core difference between maternal nurturance and paternal nurturance is what research is now showing to be actually a good difference, which is that dads stop feelings generally a little earlier than moms do, and that it's important that sons and daughters have both.
At night, I stare, wishing I could be on time to avoid changing a mammoth load in your nappy. On time to warn you about tripping up on a lace you forgot to tie. This world can be so cruel. I don't want to play catch up. Not with you.
Poet Yomi Shode is watching closely as Noah grows up.
He's going to try to mirror me as best as he can. So he'll be seeing trainers that I'm wearing. He'll try to wear my trainers. He wants that. Went to Legoland not too long ago. He's got his driver's license in Legoland. So then when we got to the car, he feels he can drive my car. Because daddy has a car, daddy has car keys, so he wants to now have the keys to try to drive the car.
But I ran till I fell, shaking in his arms.
What a shame, I would think, that I still loved him at all. But I did, and that disturbed me much more than the anger. I understood my hurt. I didn't understand him. I didn't begin to understand us.
We heard earlier how Christopher Dickey was fascinated with his own relationship with his father. In fact, one of his books, Summer of Deliverance, focused on it. And touchingly, it had a happy ending.
The next thing that happened was that he had alcoholic hepatitis and he flatlined. He just about died. And when he recovered from that, he simply quit drinking. And all of a sudden, that fog lifted. And it was possible to talk to him in ways that I hadn't been able to talk to him for years and years and years. I remember after he died, I went to the house to try and start putting things together where he lived. And I slept in the big bed where he used to sleep. And he had books piled all over the house. But right next to his bed, there were books and magazines about the Middle East conflict. And I realized that he'd been reading up on it so that we could talk about it.
But Jonathan was never able to get that closure with his dad. So instead, he played out the reconciliation he wanted in fiction. He wrote a prison drama called Startup. The film, directed by David McKenzie and produced by Film 4, focused on father and son inmates.
In case you haven't fully appreciated, I am his father.
There is then a threat to the son's life, and the father ultimately saves him. And then the father has an emotional breakthrough at the end of the film where he connects with the son. And so there's a moment between the father and the son that never happened with my father and never could happen with my father. So in a way, it's a fairy tale for me. You know, it's a story of, if you like, the bad dad who became the good dad, and the bad dad who could connect, the dad who could feel and could empathize and could understand and could regret stuff that had happened and who could want to sort of repair stuff that had happened.
Did you write the script after your father had passed?
No, he came along to certainly one of the, I think he came along to the London premiere and stuff, you know, he was very much alive. Yeah. Someone asked the sort of father-son question, and I remember saying, well, this is difficult to respond to with my father in the audience, but yes, the father and the son in the film have a rapprochement, a moment of insight together and connection and rebirth together that my father and I will never have. And there was a bit of a silence, and then they moved on to the next question.
And did your father ever comment on that or on the film?
No. He never commented on that. No one ever mentioned it.
There seems to be a history of silence between fathers and sons, a pattern of wanting to reach out to each other, but simply not knowing how. While making this programme, I've been really struck by how many of the fathers we spoke to are so aware of these patterns and want to create much better relationships with their own sons. They want to be there for their sons, and they want their sons to be able to be open and honest and real with them. I'm Nastran Tavakoli-Farr, and this episode was produced by Claire Spencer, and the studio manager was Nigel Appleton. Our editor is Andrew Smith. You may also like next week's programme on mothers and sons. You can find a host of past episodes on topics from why we feel envy, to whether luck exists, to why we apologise, amongst many others. Just head over to our website and do get in touch with any ideas for future programmes. We're at yfactor@bbc.com. I'll leave the final sign-off to 4-year-old Noah, with his dad's instruction, of course.
Okay, so let's say nice and loud, this is the Y factor.
This is the Y factor.
Nice, okay.